Thank you, Fran. Hello to everyone, and I would like to add my welcome to you. This is my first time to speak on Forthworth lectures, and I'm so very much excited about it. It's my honor and my privilege. And I'm so grateful for this invitation, and I'm so very much thankful that you have come to attend. My topic is doing the Lord's work as modeled by the lives of two Christian women, Dorcas and Priscilla. I would like for us to look first at what we can learn about these two impressive women, and then consider what we may do to be the kind of Christian workers they were. Our first Christian example is Dorcas. We can read about Dorcas in Acts chapter 9, verses 36-42. Her name was actually Tabitha. It's an Aramaic name. Dorcas is the Greek translation of Tabitha. And both words mean gazelle, a small species of deer. Dorcas lived in the city of Joppa. You may remember that Joppa was a town where Jonah went to flee from God. This is also the city where Peter has his housetop vision, as recorded in chapter 8 of Acts. In Acts chapter 9, verse 36, Dorcas is called a disciple. A disciple can simply mean a learner or a follower. But these disciples there were already Christians or saints, as verse 44 says. What did Dorcas do? Luke tells us that Dorcas was full of good works and deeds of charity, verse 36. This probably indicated that she was a person of some means. It definitely shows that she was a very generous person, both with her time and her money. She was renowned everywhere for making tunics and garments, so-called coats and shirts, verse 39. And since she was full of good works, she must have made lots of them. This was one of the ways of helping widows and needy people, one of her ways to make herself useful. What happened to Dorcas? Luke says that she became sick and died, verse 37, and it sounds like it might have been quite suddenly. Then, as the customs of those times were, her body was washed and laid up in an upper room, just to follow the tradition. And we also read in verse 39 that widows wept for her. This tells us she must be greatly loved. Christian men in Joppa also went into action. They sent two men to bring Peter from the nearby town of Lydda. They must have known then that he had power to restore her life. So they begged him to come as soon as possible, verse 38. This shows how important Dorcas was to her hometown Christians, and what a loss her death would be to the church there. When Peter came and saw her, he asked to be left alone, and then knelt and prayed, verse 40. We don't know what he said to God. He just said two words to Dorcas. Tabitha, arise. And she came back to life. Then Peter helped her to her feet and gave her back to the saints and widows, verse 41. The story of this miracle must have went far and wide because it led many to believe in Christ, verse 42. Our second Christian example is Priscilla, or Priscilla, as we call her in Ukraine. It sounds Priscilla in Greek too. We learn about her in the book of Acts and in the writings of Paul. She is called Prisca in the writings of Paul, except for two passages in majority text Bibles, like the King James and New King James. But Luke always used a diminutive form, Priscilla, in the book of Acts. We first read about her and her husband Aquila at the beginning of Acts 18. In the six references to this couple in the New Testament, Priscilla is twice as often mentioned by both Luke and Paul first. Perhaps she was better known. Maybe she was more outgoing and active than her husband. Or she may have an exceptional strength of character or some special influence in the Lord's work. Like her husband, Priscilla may have originally been from Pontus on the northern shore of the present-day Turkey, near the Black Sea. By the way, it's just 150 miles from my homeland, Ukraine, just straight across the Black Sea. The Jewish historian Philo told of a great settlement of Jews there. Priscilla and her husband may probably become Christians in Rome, since neither Paul nor Luke mentioned their conversion. They met the Apostle Paul on his first visit to Corinth, which must have been in the fall of A.D. 50. Luke tells us that Priscilla and her husband were among the Jews that the Emperor Claudius expelled from Rome the previous year. Paul stayed with Priscilla and Aquila in Corinth, and they worked together as tent makers. Verse 3. What did Priscilla do? Priscilla and Aquila were co-workers with Paul, not only in their tent-making trade, but in the Lord's cause. Paul must have had a great impact of their knowledge of the Lord's will, since they lived and worked with him in Corinth and then continued with him in Ephesus as well. Paul referred to them as his fellow workers in Christ Jesus, and mentions that in Romans chapter 16, verse 3. When Paul left Corinth, probably in the spring of A.D. 52, Priscilla and Aquila sailed with him to Ephesus, where evangelistic efforts were made. Paul parted from them for a short time, and then later finished his secondary missionary trip, promising to return if God so willed. Meanwhile, Priscilla and her husband stayed on in Ephesus, no doubt to help to prepare the soil there for sowing seeds of the kingdom. Beginning of Acts chapter 18, verse 24, Luke tells us in that place about a man named Apollos. He was a great preacher, but he was lacking in his knowledge about baptism. Then Apollos arrived in Ephesus and spoke in the synagogue. Priscilla and her husband realized there was a gap in his knowledge about baptism, so they discreetly invited him privately, and they taught him the gospel more accurately. Both husband and wife took part in it. But since Luke mentions Priscilla's name first, she probably was more active in it. This, though, does not mean that Priscilla ever taught men as a public speaker or did it in an authoritarian way. Those would be acts forbidden in scriptures, as we read about that in the 14th chapter of the 1 Corinthians and the 2nd chapter of 1 Timothy. So, in helping Apollos, Priscilla and her husband enabled a very powerful preacher to do his work for the Lord even better, and the effect of that influence was really very great. We know that Priscilla and Aquila were again with Paul when he returned to Ephesus and stayed about 3 years there on his first missionary journey, as it is recorded in Acts chapter 19. Because he mentioned them in his first letter to the Corinthians, written from Ephesus. In the 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 19, Paul said, "Aquila and Prisca greet you warmly in the Lord with the church that is in their home." In Romans chapter 16, verses 3 to 5, Paul wrote, "Greet Prisca and Aquila, my co-workers in Christ Jesus. Greet also the church that is in their house." He said that Priscilla and Aquila even risked their own necks for his sake. Romans 16:4. This act of bravery probably took place when they were all together in Ephesus, where Paul's work created a big dissension and a great riot took place, as we remember from Acts 19. Paul said that all the churches of the Gentiles were thankful to Priscilla and Aquila, no doubt for saving Paul's life, but probably also for their well-known acts of service. After the death of Emperor Claudius in AD 54, Priscilla and Aquila returned to Rome. They spent there some time, and Paul went to Corinth. Paul included a special greeting to them in his letter to the church at Rome, and he also mentioned that a church was again meeting in their home. Priscilla and Aquila had gotten to spend more than 4 years working with the great apostle and missionary. It is possible that Priscilla and her husband spent even more time with Apostle Paul during his first imprisonment in Rome, since they were already in that city. And when Paul was released, they may have left Rome with Paul and traveled with him. This seems likely because by the time Paul was a prisoner in Rome the second time, Priscilla and Aquila were back in Ephesus, working alongside with Timothy. This was probably about AD 66 and 67. At the end of Paul's last letter, he told Timothy, "Greet Prisca and Aquila," 2 Timothy 4:19. "For the better part of 16 years, godly woman Priscilla had been active in the Lord's work in some connection with the great Apostle Paul." How can we do work of the Lord like Dorcas and Priscilla? Let's look at Dorcas first. She stands out in the New Testament as one who put love into action and was loved much in return. Like her, we should use our talents and possessions for advancing the Lord's cause. What we can actually do depends sometimes on local conditions and possibilities, but in most places where I've been, there's always a possibility and opportunity for giving out clothes, donating embroidery, handicrafts, sending cards, letters of encouragement, writing poems, cooking meals, and lots of other things. Such services show that we love and really care. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17 and 18 says, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart for him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth." Paul wrote that we should be rich in good works and to be generous and ready to share, 1 Timothy 6:17. And he said that by doing that, we store up treasures for ourselves as the good foundation for our future, so that we may take hold of what is really life. We must do it because it is sacrificing to the Lord. Peter said we are to be lively stones, a spiritual house, and a holy priesthood, offering up spiritual sacrifices that are acceptable to God, 1 Peter 2:5. We should invest our time in the Lord's work, like Dorcas did. This may require limited of our time we use for leisure, rest, or entertainment. Let us remember that Jesus expects us to bear fruit, John 15:16. And there is a special blessing for those who still bear fruit in old age, Psalms 19:2-14. Dorcas was probably a widower, and up in years just before she died, but she was still diligently serving the Lord with all her heart. We serve the Lord through serving people. Paul said, "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ." Colossians 3:23-24. We should always be ready to help people with physical needs. James said, "If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and be filled,' and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that?" James 2:15-16. We can also answer people's emotional needs by encouraging them and supporting them in times of their distress, loss, and trials. Paul wrote that members of the church should have such close interaction with each other that if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. And if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. 1 Corinthians 12:26. How we serve people will affect our eternal destiny, as Jesus dramatically pointed out in Matthew 26:34-45. Jesus especially mentioned providing food, water, and clothes. He talked of strangers, the sick, and the prisoners. James said that pure religions involve taking care of the needy, such as orphans and widows, James 1:27. Christians should give hospitality to strangers, and some have entertained angels in this way, as you know, Hebrew 13:2. We should show mercy and provide care for the sick, afflicted, and disabled. Paul described a widow indeed as one who, among other things, had launched strangers, relieved the afflicted, and diligently followed every good work. 1 Timothy 5:9-10. Let us also not overlook the prisoners and those who are in rehabilitation. This is especially mentioned in Hebrews 13:3 as a duty of a Christian. If we act like Dorcas, we will set a good example for others to follow. We can motivate our Christian women, teenagers, and young girls to become Bible-like characters like Dorcas. We can be good examples to fellow Christians, like Paul wrote to Timothy, 1 Timothy 4:12. We can even illustrate Bible principles with our own lives to people of the world who never read Bible. And that is always the case in my native country. Now, how can Priscilla motivate and inspire us? No finer example of a dedicated Christian woman than Priscilla can be found on the pages of the New Testament. She is a wonderful example of a Christian wife as a co-provider of the home. If necessary, we should be willing to do our part to work like her in helping to support the family. Like her, we should be also willing to leave home and our own family and go wherever the need may arise. I'm sure you remember what Ruth said to Naomi, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Where you die, I will die. And where I be buried." Ruth chapter 1 verses 16-17. Priscilla is also a great example of a Christian wife who is devoted to spiritual work. We should be willing, as Priscilla was, to use our homes for hosting the Lord's church. Like her, we should be willing to immerse ourselves into the cause of Christ, making sure we do it in the way that would not violate the Lord's will. As Priscilla was willing to live her life outside her native country for the cause of Christ, we too should be willing to go where the Lord may call. Priscilla shows us how to become effective workers for the Lord. She stands unique among all women of the New Testament as one who spent most time learning from the Apostle Paul and helping him with his work. All women should strive to be teachers, especially of younger women and children, as Paul said in Titus 2:3, 4 and 5. But Priscilla took the necessary time and effort to become knowledgeable enough to help even a preacher to know the way of the Lord better. If we are ever to have a similar impact on others, we need to spend much time drinking deep from the Word of God. And then we must take it to be our goal. And then to put this knowledge into action, to practice it in our lives like Priscilla did, and became fellow workers in Christ Jesus. Priscilla is a wonderful example of Christian woman who put Lord's work before everything and above everything else in her life. When possibilities come for learning, we should take them and use them as Priscilla did. When doors of opportunities are open, we should follow Priscilla's example by unhesitatingly walking through. And like Priscilla, we should be even willing to put ourselves in harm's way in order to promote and preserve the cause of Christ. Here are my conclusions. Both Dorcas and Priscilla lived and worked for the Lord in such a way that their lives became legendary for others, for us to follow, even the women of today. Let us, as Christian women, strive to do the very same, so that we will be doers of the word and not hearers only. James 1:22. This is the only way we can have an eternal impact for good on the lives of others. Let us make the decision and take the initiative actually to start doing the Lord's work. at the earliest possible time. Let us put our hearts and souls in the work so much that we always are enthusiastic, excited, and passionate about it. And while we are doing it, let us always look for opportunities to do more and more, and not less and less. Let us never get tired or discouraged and quit such great and wonderful and important service to the Lord, to the cause of Christ. Paul said, "Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not lose heart." Galatians 6:9. Paul said, "As we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." Galatians 6:10. "And let us find ways to involve others in doing it." Now, in the final minutes of my presentation, I would like to share with you something from my own experience. When I tried to follow the examples of Dorcas and Priscilla, also I would like to add things I have seen others doing and share with you some things I have in mind to do, cherishing it and wanting to do it with the earliest opportunity, which I know are there coming up in my horizon. There are so many areas we Christian women can make ourselves useful. Let me single out just main ones. These areas of work I've been involved in. I'm sure there is a place for everyone present here to see the opportunity in any of these areas. And you can surely think of even more. These areas are orphanage work, work with children, helping hospitals with their medical needs, prison and rehabilitation activities, congregational work and activities, community work, sharing Christ in the work environment, summer Bible camps, helping with that, working on family members, relatives and friends, helping the Bible correspondent course, church projects, becoming a Christian author, writing cards, letters, poems, and even books. You may now imagine yourself for a while in each of these fields while I'm sharing my own experience about it. Make, please, a mental note of what you might do, having the same or similar opportunity, applying your own unique talents and God-given abilities. And I would also suggest not just to wait for the opportunities, but make them happen, creating them. Orphanage work. So, in this area, I've been working with orphans of different ages, different physical and mental abilities. That also included homeless kids. Once I had 11 in my charge. They lived just out in the street, in the hall where pipes of central heating were joining each other and were covered by a lid. You know, it took time for me to get to really learn to love children. It's so easy to love babies. They are so cute. Wonderful clothes on them. They smile back. They are so healthy. And it's tough to love children who look ugly with their faces all in sores, scratches, bleeding. They can't talk because nobody talks to them. They can't smile because they just don't know how to smile. They spend their times crying, being hungry, thirsty, ignored. And you know, when you take such a baby into your arms, you feel so much love because, you see, you use your opportunity to share your love and do your service to Jesus. You see little baby Jesus in each baby you have there. I've been dealing with the babies whose parents were trying to kill them, who tried to dig them because they were crying too much in their heap of coal, who were trying to put them to death, strangling them. And surely these babies were not healthy. Sometimes they were dirty and having ragged clothes. But you know, I looked at them and I was happy that I was blessed to find this child. And I was blessed to give a permission from the doctor to spend several hours with the child who was crying nonstop and getting all blue, coming to the death point because the heart was very weak and the baby just could not afford crying, but it was hurting. He was alone, scared, cold, and it's such a reward to hold that baby in arms and to feel him stop crying and feel comfortable. And for those minutes of comfort and peace you can give to a ignored child, you can give world of happiness and entertainment outside, because you know you are useful. And why did I go to this orphanages and hospitals, bringing crayons to children, books, taking time to take them outside and let the child first in their lives to see a flower or a real grass? They would spend like 3 years in their orphanage and hospital for special needs just in their bed. Nobody would come up to get them into arms or bring them towards the window. The nurse were doing their best to give them injections and pills and probably food at regular hours, because there was one lady in the ward of 30 kids. And that's why I just watched miracles. I would talk to a baby for half an hour, showing her around the hospital playground, and heard her respond in simple words. I thought this baby learned to say simple sounds and words for the first time in her life. I saw little boys, which whom I draw their first card on the paper, and they never saw a real car, about which boys are usually so excited. And once I told my Christian friend in the church, "Come with me to the hospital. I have these orphans who are just locked there. They would be thrilled to ride in the car along the hospital yard. It will help them to recover. They will feel happy, cared for, loved." I remember those days. I bet there was not a happier day for four little boys who had a ride in the back seat of the car. Like for 3 minutes, I think they would remember that. They got out of the car feeling healthier, much happier. I remember bringing my dog to the hospital with the permission of the doctors, because those puppy dog I had was such a joy to little kids who never saw that, never heard a dog bark, never had an opportunity to touch a grass or a flower. And you know, it's a challenge. When I was spending my hours, precious hours of my academic time, with lots of responsibilities in my teaching career and job, in the yard of the hospital, surrounded with kids dressed very poorly, with the clothes that has been washed like hundreds of times, lost their color, and everybody could tell, these are orphans, they are not my own kids, because the proud mamas with good kids, nicely dressed, were sitting aside on the benches, and none of them would want to take an orphan child outside. They had enough troubles with their own sick kids. And one day, my colleague who was passing by the hospital yard told me, "What are you doing there?" I said, "I am feeling very happy. I am helping kids to get healthier, to gain love, to be brought back into life again." And you know, I thought she would look down at me and think I am kind of a weak person or had nothing else to do. But she spread a word about this. And next time I would go there, some of my colleagues said, can I go with you? I said, sure. I myself can carry 4 kids, but with you, we can carry 10. In a month, I would to have like maybe 20 people with me there. We would put blankets in the hospital yard and would had all orphans out. Little bed, babies, toddlers, even grown-ups. And people in the hospital would wonder, who would do these things? What people are those? And they came to learn that we are Christians, and they gained respect for the things we did. And they were so inviting. They let me do the things I don't think they ever let me do here in America, spending my times in the hospital, assisting nurses, babies, feeding them, changing their clothes, mending their torn out shirts, because sometimes I would find them with the big knots on their bellies, the shirts would just be tight on their bodies, making them suffer and hurt because the buttons would go off and nobody would care to put them back. I would happily do that. So I, you know, in my medical activities, I really, as I'm sure many of you did, would go to see sick people in the hospital, bringing food to them. And I've learned of some people who would go to the hospital to read Bible to blind people, which I'm eager to do, or those who are bedfast. And, you know, when you do that to one person in a ward with 20 people there, all of them take time to listen to you. And when I was myself in the hospital, and that used to be a frequent case with me, I rejoiced there because I said, oh, wonderful opportunity. People who are not hurrying anywhere, they are in their beds with me, and we read Bible aloud, and I tell them about church. And then they like me, because I help them in their everyday needs. In the hospital with elderly women, you have lots of work to do to take care of them. And they feel appreciative of that. And they all knew I would not tell them lies. I would not tell them false things because I care for them. I was telling them the way to life. And many of those came to visit with the church and became Christian there. You know, I will try to do more of that. See this blouse I'm wearing today? I'm proud of this because that was made for me in the prison. Men, male inmates embroidered this to me and gave it as their gift of appreciation. Prison work is very rewarding. Some people would tell to me, why do you go to prison? What can you get there is lots of infection, diseases, you will get sick and die. And they would never appreciate what you do. It's dangerous. I would not listen to that. I'll do my best to help my husband. He conducts lessons in the prison. And I'm eager to do my part in women's prisons, to which we already get the permission. It took tons of papers. And sometimes lots of them were rejected. But finally, we got it. And we got appreciated even by the boss of the prison, who gave my husband an embroidery shirt, a sample of Ukrainian national clothes, and inviting him back. They are eager. They are waiting for us. They wanted us to bring Bibles. We already gave them shelves to their library, and that reserved some places to put our literature on those. So I plan even to work part-time in the prison because it gives me an opportunity to spend more time with women there. I am a qualified embroiderer. I took time to learn that trade in vocational school, and I can teach them because I know that can become their way of earning livings, making shirts, towels, and selling them later. By the way, they have some little workshops there, but there's no volunteers who would like to come and work in the prison so enthusiastically. Little payment, little attention, all this prosecution and dangerous situation, but I am willing. I love it. And I'm willing to do letter writing to prison, to inmates, conducting Bible correspondent courses and congregational activities within our own churches. I did ladies' classes, children's Bible classes, youth group meetings and activities. We used to have ladies' prayer meetings and keep ladies' prayer book. That means during the week, a lady with a need would come to the church to leave her prayer request in that book. And that gives her extra time to come to the church, and there's always someone there to pray together. And then on Saturdays, we will meet together, those who would love to come, and we will read those requests. And they sometimes were very personal, very specific, and that this is what is important, because when we come to know about particular little and big personal things, like a breakup in the family, the son that got to drinking, the daughter that did some violent sin, some mishaps, for whom sometimes a person can tell no one about that. That's either too shameful or too distressful. But coming to this prayer meeting together, leaving the prayer request, we would learn what happened in the family, who suffers from what, who needs what help. And that gave us a feeling of a family. And those prayers really worked. I also done lots of repairs, big and little. I can paint, I can, put plasters on the walls, I can fix doors, stairs, everything. And I enjoy doing that. And I usually do even more than people expect of me. That was the case in our new repairs room, when we paid the place and then even painted the doorways and walls outside, which put the people into amazement. Why would someone invest money and time doing this for the community? It's worth it, because this is what pays back. And certainly in the church, we can have Dorcas Day, as my beloved fellow women in Beltline Church of Christ are doing. They have Dorcas Day. I say, let's have Dorcas life. So this is much more exciting. Community work is very rewarding. Like, I plan this year to plant trees along the street that leads to church meeting place and arrange flower beds there and take care of them all the year long, because that attracts people. I had this case. We were doing the repairs work, and that involved lots of materials and repair stuff being brought on and created lots of dirt. And I would get up 4 o'clock early morning to clear it all up, not to cause any complaints of the neighbors. And I was doing it secretly. And one day when I was on my way into the apartment, I met a couple of women, and there were more arriving than on the bench, because it's a custom to sit by the doorway and discuss the people, their personal issues among the women whom we think to be idle in a way. So, and one woman say, "Why are you, I've heard you are settling a church place here. Who gave you a permission? We're against that. We did not sign any papers. We don't want a bunch of crazy fanatics again here nearby. We have lots of problems besides."